So my friend Ken Smith, who I've known for quite a few years on the web, he just wrote something I thought was eminently quotable. Two things. He's a professor at the University of Indiana. He says, first, school shouldn't be so alienating, and young people are entitled to the power tools of the culture. They like to hear a faculty member say that aloud in class. They like talking about what that entails. And I like it too. And I'm long past age of being one of Ken's students. But the power tools of the culture seems to me to be a very good idea of what a college education should be. It doesn't say power tools of the economy. It doesn't say power tools of some industry or some art. It says the culture, and that's the totality of it. So, you know, when people say, well, how am I going to make a living, you know, with this English class, or I'll never use this math in real life? Well, maybe the only reason you should be studying this is because it is one of the power tools of the culture you're in, you know? I had a friend say to me, this is somebody who doesn't really know all the ins and outs of computers, a guy that's my age, is a friend of mine, and I like him very much. He's a very intelligent person, has a great sense of humor, has talents that I've never either had or developed if I had them. And it makes him an interesting person to hang out with. And he says, well, you know, relative to computers, well, I don't have a deep knowledge of Russian literature either. And I said, yes, but you're living in this Russian literature. This is the context in which you live. So having basic computer skills isn't something to be scared of. It's something to embrace. It's why you should use Facebook. Even if you don't like Facebook, you should use it. I mean, I could go on for hours on why Facebook is an essential tool, why it doesn't matter that the company is evil or not. It isn't for us to say. The cost benefit is, the cost is that we give up information about ourselves. The other cost is that we may not like what we're doing from a moral standpoint. The benefits are huge, so you should do it. You should use Facebook. But the culture tools of the power tools of the culture, that's a really big one. And I want those too. And unfortunately, after all of the change that I've lived through and some of which I've helped bring about, I still find that most of the power tools aren't available to me. And this is the frustration that I feel. I wrote about it in the middle of the night at 3 a.m., which is normal for me. I'm usually up at 3 a.m. I go to sleep at around 10. I wake up at 3. A couple hours after that, I go back to sleep and wake up about 9. That's my life. Or my COVID pandemic scheduled life. Such as it is, probably will be if the pandemic eases up in within my lifetime, it probably still will be my schedule. I wrote a thing where this is something that had been brewing inside of me for a very long time. And I hadn't known how to write it. I mean, when I say a very long time, I mean a decade or more. But it's a hard one to write. It's like I'm saying, let me see if I can get the exact text here. Here it is. I enjoy writing my blog because as I'm writing, I feel like I'm helping straighten things out. But it's an illusion. None of it ends up in the bigger conversation. None of it ends up mattering. It's a pretty compact statement. And it also, I stand by it. It's, you know, unlike a lot of things that you write in the middle of the night, this one reflects how I feel. And, you know, the only emotion I mention in here and joy isn't, I guess it's kind of an emotion. I don't say whether I'm frustrated or upset or contemplating suicide, but most of the responses were as if I needed to be talked off the ledge. Oh, Dave, you're okay. Oh, I really do read what you think. I do care. You are influential. blah, 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 blah. And I go, fuck you. That's such bullshit. It's not, first of all, it isn't in any way, I wasn't seeking anything. Let's be clear about that. I'm in the middle of an idea, a way of expressing something. And I've written about this before, that with its 280 character limit and some tools that I have built into my blogging tools, it really is a practical way for me to write a first draft of a blog post by putting it in a tweet at 3 a.m. It will end up in my content editing system for my blog with a single command, along with everything else I tweeted at night. And so, really, you're privy, but my philosophy is that fuck it, just put it out there. Who cares who sees it? But people seem to think that, not everybody, because most people, if they read that tweet, and I think it went right by most people, because most everything does, but most people who saw it, I'm guessing, didn't feel compelled to respond to it, which is correct. They did not need to respond to it. There was almost no response that even would make sense. It's not asking a question. And to deny it, to say that it's not true, implies that you think somehow you understand the situation better, and you don't. So I wrote at length about why, what was behind this. I had written two pieces in the last week, and each of them had required weeks of thinking. Not required, it's just the background noise in my head. I'm looking at a situation, I'm saying something doesn't feel right about this. And maybe I can kind of put it in words, so I try explaining it to a friend, and I'm not satisfied with the result because they end up arguing about something completely different from what I was even talking about or thinking about. Obviously, what I said triggered something in them that wasn't what I was thinking about. And it also assumes that what I was thinking about was important. I think it is. The two pieces, one was about what is going to come of the Black Lives Matter phenomenon. I mean, it's nothing less than a phenomenon. And, I always ask myself, what exactly does this mean? I mean, why now, in the midst of a pandemic, which is killing a lot of people, and it's a bigger threat to all of us, including Black lives that matter, than police violence is. At this point, it's a much bigger threat. So my guess is that there's some component of the Black Lives Matter push, which is saying, hey, if I feel like my life doesn't matter, and I do as a 65-year-old white man, I can only imagine how a Black person in my situation or a younger Black person would feel. If I don't feel my life matters, maybe I understand a little bit better how they feel. Because I don't believe my life matters. I believe that the world will get along just fine, and it's all being set up so that it will. I see all these corpses, and you're starting to see the body bags now, which is a really good thing. We should have been seeing them all along. I mean, we were seeing the refrigerator trucks out in front of Elmhurst Hospital, and we were seeing the mass graves being dug in New York. These are good things because it helps bring home the stakes in this. And if people don't see that and understand that they could be in one of those body bags, that someone just like them is in one of those body bags, well, they can. That's the thing. And people may not want to look, but this is one you can't avoid looking at. And it's a point at which lives have been tremendously devalued all in a period of a few months. And, if you want to talk about morality, none of us is free of being guilty for this. I mean, it happened on a much smaller scale in Puerto Rico with the hurricane. I mean, you could have legitimately concluded that Puerto Rican lives don't matter, because they don't, because the United States, of which they are part of, did not come to their assistance. They needed our help and we weren't there. It's one of many things we have been guilty of. And, you know, it's we tend to think that it's not our fault, but it is our fault. We now know that people can get out in the street and protest. This is what it took to get them out into the street. Okay, at least something did. It looked for a very long time, I mean a very long time, like nothing would get Americans out into the street. Well, that's different now. Things have changed. Things will continue to change at a very rapid pace. So that first piece said, okay, well, we've got all this attention on this whatever is driving this. Okay, so what are we going to do about it? What's the result? What are we going to do with this new power? Because power, if you don't do something with the power, I don't see what the point is in having it. I mean, what did he call it? The power tools of the culture, right? Well, the power tools of the culture don't say just accept symbolic compensation. I mean, so they're taking monuments down. They took the stars and bars off the Mississippi state flag. Biden might nominate a black woman for vice president. I mean, these are all, they'll put a woman, black woman on a postage stamp or a black man on a, on the $100 bill or whatever. These would all be nice. We'll take down the statue of Thomas Jefferson. We'll name a city after some, after, I don't want to be specific. I'm not saying symbolic things don't matter. They do. They really, really do. But there's going to be a massive amount of money spent in the next year to try to keep the United States from collapsing, because the United States is going to need it. And I really hope that the people who allocate the money, i.e. Congress, will not fuck around with this, and that money will be allocated. The question is, where does the money go? They'll call it a stimulus, but if it goes to the 1%, it won't stimulate anything. It'll just be a gift to the 1%. And it will help perpetuate the problem. It won't, it won't perpetuate it. The people who have the wealth in the country can't do anything with more wealth. It's simply true. There's a math to this. A human being only occupies so much space and only lives so long. There isn't really much you can do with that money, but it'll go to them, and it won't go to solving healthcare. It won't help education. It won't fix the infrastructure. It won't redesign our economy to help survive the climate crisis. It won't help Black Lives Matter in the big picture. A lot of these things, it's really interesting listening to the 1619 podcast from the New York Times, which I highly recommend for anybody who thinks they're educated. Well, if you're not educated in all likelihood. They left a lot of things out in our study of American history, and it was just scratching the surface of filling in those blanks about what you missed. And it's true that a lot of the rights that we have came from the struggle of African Americans to become citizens of the United States after slavery ended. None of this was automatic. It was a big fight, and it was a moment, kind of like the moment we're in now, maybe bigger. Of course it's bigger, but it was a moment, and the moment was used to change the Constitution of the United States. I mean, that's a big one. That's where the inspiration for that post came from. And I should have put that in there. I think I did put in there that I was moved by the 1619 podcast. I also am reading the People's History of the United States. It's also filling in the blanks. I did ask on Twitter and got criticism for this. Why, I don't know. Is there a good history of the United States written from a black perspective? In other words, not from a white perspective, but from a black perspective. I mean, and the criticism came from a black man, a professor at some, I don't remember what university. It was disgusting, honestly, really disgusting. I mean, what does victory look like? Is there anything a white person can say about race or even ask about race that isn't subject to a put down? I think part of the victory that the Black Lives Matter, I've said this in the piece too, that movement wants is, I don't know how to put it, but if you listen to the actual words, is they want white people to understand what it's like to be a black person. Well, I said in that piece, and I said in other places in my blog, of course, like my blog never generates any heat these days. I said, yeah, well, that's not going to happen. I'm not saying that I won't study and read whatever you give me, and if there's information in there and perspectives that are will alter my perspective, I'm totally open to that. But I'm just one person. You will never get people to see things from your point of view if they don't want to. And honestly, this isn't just true of black people. It's true of everybody. Nobody really wants to see anything from anybody else's perspective. The number of people that are even aware that there is such a thing is small. And the number of people who want to see something from other people's perspective, well, they don't. They just project all over it. They only have their own experience to draw from. That isn't the victory we should be looking for here. I say we because I'm talking about Americans. We should be looking for something far more material, more concrete, more significant. Honestly, you can't eat the respect of white people. But if we change the economic system in the United States, just starting with healthcare, for example, get rid of the insurance companies, you can be healthier and you can live longer, and so can your family. This is a big deal in my humble opinion, and it is achievable. It's achievable. It's, you know, most years you'd say, well, it's going to be a long time before we ever achieve equality there. But this is actually a moment when it's achievable. We should be jumping right into that. Well, anyway, that's what was in the piece. It was more. I'm being very long-winded right now. The other piece was about the virus and where we're at with it. And yes, some of it is about how angry I am. And I think anger is just the tip of the iceberg. Rage would be better. That this country that... It's the same old shit. Our electoral college and the way the Senate is composed, this was the big sin of the founders of the United States. I mean, it was a compromise. I understand why they did it, but it has crippled this country. It's said that simple-mindedness rules in here, and if they can't see it, they don't appreciate it. So they can't see the virus. They don't believe it exists. You could talk about being racist, you could talk about a lot of things, but ultimately, if the United States dies from this, that is going to be the cause of death. That the simple-mindedness and lack of respect for science. You build a society on science like the United States, and people just take for granted that they turn the ignition on their car and there's a controlled explosion happening under the hood, and they can just go wherever they want. They think, well, that's, you know, that's just the way it is, right? Well, there's a lot of science in there. You're living a science life. And you're going to die a science death if you're not careful. So, well, we have to bend some rules now. And they're not rules that are illegal. It's not a matter of doing things that are illegal. They're just norms. And one of the norms, which should have been busted a long time ago, in my humble opinion, is this idea that a political campaign can't yield a benefit until it results in an election and swearing somebody into office. That if Joe Biden is to be president of the United States, Joe Biden can't actually do anything until January 21st, 2021. But there's no law that says that's true. Joe Biden, in fact, See, in the first one, getting a message through to the Black Lives Matter movement is a very hard thing to do because there isn't a person. It's only a large number of people. And it's very hard to imagine how one person can get an idea through there, especially a white person. I was hoping that I would write that piece, and one of the black people who lead the discussion, somebody like Maya Wiley or Al Sharpton, many of them, one of them, just one of them, would see this and say, this idea needs to get out there. Next time I'm on a talk show, I'm going to talk about this, or I'm going to pitch this idea to Ari Melber. I don't want to be on TV. I would probably turn it down. I don't like TV. I want the idea on TV, though. I want the idea that there's all this money, and this money is up for grabs, and let's go grab it. Let's grab it to do the good. That's hard to hit, to reach that, because it's so diverse, and there is no single leader. But in the case of the virus, there is one person, that's Joe Biden. Joe Biden is hopefully will be our president in 2021. But right now, we have this vacuum of leadership. It's true, Joe Biden won't have the budget of the United States, but he can create a pulpit from which somebody who has proven ability to organize a response to the virus, i.e. Governor Andrew Cuomo of New York, simply by naming him his chief virus advisor. Not necessarily his chief virus advisor after the election, his chief virus advisor right now, from the political point of view, his version of Mike Pence. People could assume or could extrapolate that he will play the role that Mike Pence plays today in the American government's response to the virus in the Biden administration. It breaks the rule that says that you can't provide a benefit while you're just a candidate, but there's nothing that says that all the money you spend to become president, that some of that money can't be spent for good, even if you don't win. And by the way, it would be the best fucking advertising for a political campaign ever. We're going to save your life. Oh, really? Okay. I'm up for that. You mean I don't have to go into a body bag? Okay. You mean my mother and grandmother, best friend, wife, son, daughter, niece, nephew, aunt, uncle, best friend, somebody I don't even like, they don't have to go into the body bag either, right? That's right. If we all can get together and do this, a lot of people that would normally be going into body bags will be living their lives next year, might even get to vote in November. I can't see how that doesn't go over incredibly well. Yet, I have no ability to get that idea in front of Joe Biden. And it's not like this is the first time that's happened. Oh my God. It's like so many things like that. Going back, I hate to say it, decades. It's just the sense of powerlessness that I can't insert an idea into the conversation. I'm not looking for anything in return, honestly. If I just figure something out, and I've got a good mind for that, I do figure things out, that for whatever reason other people are too busy or focused on other things, or just, I love puzzles that involve breaking rules. If I just break this rule, what can I do? What if I could take this and move this over here? How would that work out? These are things that just, my brain does this by default. And it does figure things out sometimes. And so I watch Andrew Cuomo solve the problem in New York, and it was a leadership problem, and I've never seen anyone, political leader, anything, seize the moment like this man did. He's just ripe for this. He's ready to do it. Fucking give him the keys and let him go. But it isn't even in the discussion because journalism is trying desperately to keep this like a normal situation. Cover it using the rules they've always covered things from, that this is just another instance of Watergate. Maybe it's a little more extreme than Watergate, but we're going to deal with it just like as if it were Watergate. And I read this piece from Umair Haq, I think that's how you pronounce his name. And he says, you know, the United States and Great Britain are both completely falling apart, and nobody inside the United States or Great Britain is even talking about it. Well, there you go. It's as if, like, I'm not even here. But I'm doing something that Umair Haq isn't doing. Umair Haq is calling it over, and I'm saying, no. I saw Michelle Goldberg, who I admire. I think she's brilliant. I think she has a mind that just connects things together. She connected something. She's something from somebody in France saying, oh, we're having a normal summer here. The only thing that's not normal is there are no tourists from America or Russia here. She goes, maybe I should have gone to France, but I didn't. Meaning when Trump, she said it, when Trump got elected, she thought about how could she leave the country, but she didn't. She did the right thing by not leaving the country. I did the same thing. We need to stay here and fight for this fucking country. This is a good country, and we need to stand up for it. And we need to say, no, this country doesn't need to go down. And by the way, this is how that's going to work. I mean, that's the whole package. Umair Haq throws his hands up in the air and says, oh my God, it's all over, and nobody's even talking about it. Well, Umair Haq, if it's all over, what the fuck difference does it make if people are talking about it or not? I mean, it's like you're talking about a movie review. Okay, well, not a very good movie. The world was crumbling. They weren't even talking about it. No, I mean, what we ought to be talking about is ways we can break rules that fix the problem. Somebody needs to go over there and yank fucking Trump by the collar and take him into some island in the Caribbean and fucking lock the door and turn off the internet. No more tweets. Oh, Trump, he had to go. He needed to go for a vacation. Couldn't you tell? The guy was exhausted. And then, by the way, Mike Pence, fucking wear the mask and shut the fuck up and let Fauci run the show. And I have a funny feeling that with Trump out of the way, Mike Pence goes, whew, what a relief. Can I run for president? Sure, but you got to understand, Fauci runs the virus. No problem. He can run. Our immediate problem is we need to stop writing about Trump. We need to stop talking about Trump. Trump is just our sickness. He's the other pandemic. Well, so I put the piece out there. I was very explicit about what needed to happen. Nothing happened. And of course, as I was publishing it, I knew that nothing would happen. Did I get upset? No, actually I didn't. What I did was I said, I know how I have to solve this problem. And I got busy trying to solve the problem. And I need to turn this conversation in a different direction. And that direction is, how do I get into the fucking conversation? How do I get somewhere where people actually give a shit what I say? And until that happens, I don't see any point writing any more of these pieces. It's just a waste of energy. That's not a threat. I'm not asking for sympathy. You don't need to talk me down from the ledge, etc., etc. I mean, everybody assumes that somebody posts something on the internet, that they want something. And this is fucking bug. This is a huge bug. I don't have a book to sell. I'm not looking for a job. I'm not looking for money. I'm not looking for anything. All I want is to be part of the fucking conversation. That's it. If my ideas stink, then fine. Let them stink. But if they get you to think and they yield something else, I mean, great. Then I did my job. And I can enjoy whatever this is. I don't know if we can call it a life, but it is what it is. Okay. Well, thank you. If you made it this far, I want to thank you very much from the bottom of my heart for listening. And hope to talk with you soon again. Bye-bye.